Happy New Year and welcome to Savvy Snoots. I can't believe 2025 is already here and we are kicking off our very first episode. So welcome. Whether you're a seasoned IT pro, a curious learner, or someone who just stumbled into the world of IT service management, you are in the right place. We are going to be continuing our podcast, diving deeper into the story, strategy, and tools that keep IT operations running smoothly. Our very first guest for 2025 is Ken Jarvis. Ken has an amazing career, as you will hear. Someone who started a career in IT at 17 and continued in this journey, I guess the journey filled by passion, excitement, entertainment, and I'm sure a fair part of challenges. He now works as a business advisor, CEO, managing partner, to name a few. So welcome, Ken. Thank you for joining us and thank you for sharing your story and your wisdom.
All right. Okay. So, well, thank you so much, Ken. We love having you on our podcast, Service Notes. Thank you for making time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, what you do, what's keeping you busy?
Good. Thanks, Rina, and hello to your viewers and listeners. Really good to be spending time with you today. Ken Jarvis, I was born in England but grew up in South Africa. I moved to America 7 years ago. One of my clients asked me to come and run a business out of Deerfield Beach in Florida. I still live in Florida. I have moved subsequently to a small little town north of Orlando called Ocala. So I'm in Ocala. I'm married to Linda for 44 years. I have two children and four grandchildren. So it's a little bit of personal background. What keeps me busy? Quite a lot. I'm involved in a multitude of companies. I'm a fractional CEO for a number of companies. I'm a mentor and coach for people around the world, executives around the world. And currently, I'm spending a lot of time with PeopleCert, the ITIL guys. And helping them, reinvigorate the ITIL brand, helping people understand what ITIL can do for them from both a career point of view and also from a business point of view. So I'm involved in a lot of things, and enjoying myself. I really do enjoy what I do.
Yeah, no. Oh my God. So when I'm listening to your introduction, I'm like, am I asking personal question? Am I asking him career question? Am I asking vital question? You're like a one person wearing so many different hats. So what I would start with is obviously, given your personal background information, I'm kind of curious, how did you evolve, right? Because it sounds like you started a while ago and you're still going and you're doing a lot of exciting stuff. So how did you evolve with time and technology as you progressed in your career?
Great question. I got into technology by luck. I was a good student at school. I didn't like school, but I was a very good student. I had a scholarship to attend university, but I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I'd been through a couple of cycles in my life. I wanted to be a pilot, then I wanted to be something else. And the company that gave me the scholarship said to me, "Look, rather than rush into any, university or college, why don't you just take a gap year, get your thoughts together, and we'll carry the scholarship over for the following year." I said, "But what am I going to do in this year?" They said, "Come and work in our computer department." And I said, "What's a computer?" Because I didn't know what it was. At the end of that year, I was so enjoying being in the IT industry. It wasn't called IT in those days. I was so enjoying it that I just decided to stay in it. And a few months later, I joined IBM. So I joined IBM as an 18-year-old, and I spent 10 years at IBM. And IBM was my grounding. I always say I do not have a college degree, but my 10 years at IBM was my college degree. It taught me a lot. So it taught me my value systems. It taught me how to be a good manager. One of the things I realized very quickly is I thought I was always going to be on the management side of business, not a technical guy. But I wanted very much to get a strong grounding in technical. I wanted to have something to be able to fall back on if I failed as a manager. So I spent the first 6 years of my life at IBM focusing on a technical career path that always would give me the opportunity to say, "I'm not good as a manager, let me go back to being a technical guy." And I would urge everybody to do that. Any youngster leaving school, leaving university or college, focus on getting a skill you can always fall back on. just in case something goes wrong. Yeah, something goes wrong with your company, goes bankrupt, you can always fall back on your technical skills. So I would always recommend a very, very, very strong technical background. So how did I get into IT? A sequence of events that just has never stopped. And yes, I have been in it for a long time, a very long time. But I did start when I was 17 years old as well. But it goes on for a while.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And I suppose, yes, you've been here for a long time, but you haven't stayed the same. Hence, you're able to excel and advance, right? It's like you have evolved with the technology. And I like your concept, like falling back on your technical skills. It's one of those things. I was in an interview with someone at New York University. And he was asking me this question, like, graduate and why do people go for a degree and things of that nature. And he said, as you graduate and as you study, because the curriculum involves so many different things and so many different tasks, one of the things it teaches you is that you can roll up your sleeve and can do pretty much anything. I think that's what you're kind of like sharing, like, don't get stuck on one thing. Like, yes, be a manager, but you could become a good manager if you know. You don't have to be an expert, of course, but you know what your team you are managing is working on. It's a bit like you want to be a service delivery manager and you don't know ITIL. Could you really be good at your job? I doubt it because you won't really know what your team is supposed to deliver. So, yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, we kind of agree. And it's a good tip because see how far you have come. So, yeah.
And another thing that IBM taught me, Rena, was expect change. IBM in the I'm talking about 1970s. IBM in those days was ranked the number one business in the world. And IBM expected you to change jobs. They encouraged it every 2 years, but forced it every 3 years. So every 3 years, you would have a new job. So I was used to always moving around. I was at IBM for 10 years. I had nine jobs, nine different jobs, okay, while still focusing on a technical career path. So I moved from technical through to sales through to product management. And expecting that change is something that I've always had in life. I following IBM, I effectively worked for companies for 4 years at a time. But expecting the unexpected is something that everybody should encourage and get excited about. Let me give you a real life example. I was the CIO for the equivalent of the IRS in South Africa. And yeah, it was a big job. I had just under 1,000 staff. It was a large budget, very, very, very responsible position, collecting tax for the new democracy of South Africa, because this was post, obviously, our first democratic elections. And I was sitting in my office one day, and the head of the equivalent of the IRS walked past my office, and he said, "Ken, our property portfolio is a mess." I said, "Yes." So I said, "It's your problem now," and started walking away. I said, "What do you mean it's my problem?" He said, "No, I've taken it away from the current guy running it. I think you're the right guy to fix it. Please fix it for me." In that 30 seconds, I inherited 135 buildings and 1,500 staff in a property portfolio, which I knew nothing about. So expecting change and embracing it. I could have got scared. I could have run away. I could have said, "I don't want it." I just turned and said, "Just another challenge." And so embrace that change. I think it's exciting to have new challenges every day.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when I'm interviewing you, I just feel like looking at you and your smile, you really love what you do. It's pretty obvious, like, and I guess maybe that's what IBM like ingrained in you by giving you different change and exciting challenges, and you just rolled up your sleeve and you just, kind of went with it. And perhaps you were so much younger and it kind of helps, right? Let's put it that way. Like when you're in your 20s versus when you're in 50s.
I think anybody gets to the point where they know everything, I think, is extremely arrogant. I learn every day, Rena. I learn from people when I'm mentoring young executives. I'm learning from them. In today's world, you have to learn to change your ideas. It's a very different world we live in today. The workforce is different, to the workforce that I was used to leading. So learning is part of the role for your entire life. It should never go away and never become arrogant that you think you know it all. I think that would be the start of being a failure, I believe. Make mistakes. Don't be scared to make a mistake. Learn from your mistake and move on. If I was to turn around and show you the scars on my back, there's a lot there. I've made lots of mistakes, but I learned from it, and then I'm better the next time I do something. I always say to people, make a mistake. I don't worry about it. Don't make it twice.
True, very true, very true. And I think when you meet a leader, like one of the things I used to do is I would ask, like, "Oh, are you so confident? Like, doesn't anything like kind of scare you?" And it's like, you don't know what I've been through. If you know what I've been through, you know how I got here. You know, it's like one of those things, like somehow when we meet a leader, you think they must be born with it, right? Or the lucky stars put them in that executive. But I think I kind of like agree with you, and thank you for sharing your story. It can inspire people. Like, you know, it's not an overnight thing. Like, if you were to look at everyone's scar, you know how they actually got there. So yeah, no, thank you. I appreciate that. One thing I do want to ask you is, how did you find yourself in service management space? Like your engagement right now with ITIL guy, the people cert, like how did you got introduced to service management?
Ah, gee, I inherited my first CIO role when I was in my late 20s. So I was appointed as a CIO
So
of
you're
an
like the early bloomer. Is that
organization.
the
Yeah, early bloomer.
word?
Or I was just fool enough to accept the challenge.
Yeah, give it to that guy who's not gonna ask my salary. Yes, go.
the executive that appointed me turned around and said, "We're not happy with the service from the IT department." And I walked in, and our availability wasn't good. Our service desk wasn't running well. It just was a shambles. And I started asking around, and somebody pointed me to an organization that was running ITIL. It was a startup organization, ITIL. I'm talking about the late 80s kind of thing. And the people were saying, "You need to think about the ITIL framework." And I said, "What's the ITIL framework?" So I was introduced to a company that was supporting ITIL in South Africa and doing implementations. And I'm going to mention the name of the company in a second, not because I'm advertising, but because it's an interesting story. And
Sure.
I looked at this and I said, "This is going to work for me." And I said, "This is what's going to help me to run a more stable environment, to understand what's going on in my environment." So yeah, I did not specifically look for ITIL. I was looking for a solution to a problem that I had. And I think that that's important, that people need to understand the problem. In every CIO role I've been in since, and I've been in five of them, I walk in and I go, "Do you have ITIL?" "No." "Implement it." "Do you have ITIL?" "No." "Well, I want yes." "What I want to review as to how well it's working." At the end of the day, any CIO that is a good CIO still needs to understand the fundamentals of their job to keep the business running and to keep the IT systems working. And by the way, people that say 6 nines, 99.999% uptime is not good enough. Your target's 100%. Your system should never go down. Now, I know how difficult that is, but people expect your system to work 100% of the time. You don't expect your electricity to go down for 2 hours a week for maintenance.
True, true.
It must
I
just
agree.
work. Coming back to the story, the company that I approached to do the rollout was headed up by David Cannon. So David Cannon, who most people around the world was known as Mr. ITIL, was my introduction to ITIL, going back a very long time, and he did the first ITIL rollout for me when I was a CIO and he was starting a small business doing ITIL implementations.
Wow, very, very interesting. Okay. So if I were to ask you, your ITIL probably very first introduction implementation 1980s versus 21st century, how, like, what is difference? Like, what are the core principles which are still the same, and how it can help current CIO or, you know, current directors to, I suppose, bring efficiencies in their IT organization?
I think if you look at the part of ITIL, it's still the same. And I'm not saying that ITIL is not evolved. I'll cover that in a second. But the ability to do incident management, resolution management, change management, measure your availability, the basics of ITIL are still at the cornerstone of what every IT department should be thinking about and doing. Any IT department that's not understanding its incidents, what the trends are, why the trends are there, addressing the trends, making sure the availability is there, managing changes, managing incidents, any company that's not doing that, hey guys, go and put in ITIL 1, okay? That's what you need. If you look at the recent evolution of ITIL 3 to 4, IT now can be as dispersed as the company that you work for. The early days of cloud computing and IT losing control was Salesforce. I'm not blaming Salesforce. It's a great product, great company. Okay. But the sales directors were being approached by Salesforce. The Salesforce was not talking to the CIO. They would talk to the sales director. They'd say to the sales director, I can give you the sales forecasting tool. I'll give you two licenses and you just put it on your credit card every month. Sales director said, I've got a solution for my team. I don't have to ask IT. You're going to tell me to wait 2 years and I can get up and running tomorrow. And suddenly you have an IT department in your Salesforce, in your
Yes.
sales team. Okay. And the same was happening with other offerings, et cetera. I know that a CFO who outsourced to General Ledger to a cloud as a service General Ledger package without the CIO knowing. And you kind of go, so you started losing that control. Those same sales directors suddenly had 10 licenses, 15 licenses. Finance wanted access to the Salesforce system to look at the numbers and the forecasts. So the finance guys didn't know how to use it. So they phoned the sales director and say, how do I use this? He said, I don't know how to manage this situation. And the sales director would phone the CIO and say, help. And I'd go, you're running a little IT shop. You need to put ITIL in. Or you need to ask me to come and help you manage it. And you can still have control, but let me help you manage it on a day-to-day basis. So now that's what ITIL 4 covers. Okay, how do you cover the rest of the business from an ITIL point of view with cloud, with disparate, dispersed potential IT systems, IT systems that aren't potentially under your control as a CIO? That's where ITIL 4 comes in. It's helping you manage the evolution of what's happening in business.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think you see this, I think we still see that today, actually, especially when there is a global presence, sometime because they need application in different language, or sometime it's just, they don't want to check, they want to do something super quick. So what makes sense? Just go put it on my credit card. And when it doesn't
Absolutely.
work, it's like, yeah, like one of those, like a network certificate block that system, like, okay, call IT, what happened? I was able to use it yesterday. So yeah, I think ITIL 4 can help you greatly. Not necessarily say like you can't do anything, but use this structure to run this effectively, at least inform other people that that's what you're
Help
doing.
the business because ultimately you still want the business to succeed.
Yeah.
I don't want that sales director to fail because if he doesn't bring sales in, there's no revenue, we all lose our jobs. I want him to be successful. Okay. How do I help him be successful? Help him, but with my expertise to help him make Salesforce work correctly for the company as a whole, not just.
All right. So, Ken, I have one question for you. Given you started your journey, kind of junior at 17, you moved on different department to the CIO and still continuing that work. What have you learned? Like, what's your lesson learned?
I remember a family member once saying to me that you've been very lucky in your career, Ken. And my answer back was, the harder I worked, the luckier I got. Nothing just comes to you easily. You have to put the effort in, work hard. My success did not come easy. I worked hard. I made mistakes. I took chances. I took risks. But the more I challenged myself and the more my management challenged me. I've been very lucky to have some people I've reported to that would always push me hard and challenge me and tell me to do, like the example of taking over the property portfolio. I didn't see that as my boss had the trust in me to give me that. I took that as a compliment, not as an insult. And just to accept that and take it, but the fact he asked me to do it, I should look at that as, gee, he really wants me to try and help fix this problem. So, take on the challenges. Don't avoid the challenges. Work hard. To repeat, I use it a lot. The harder I work, the luckier I got.
Were you like, I guess I just want to ask you this, like, were you always so humble when these opportunities kind of came to you? Like, were you kind of just always open, ready, and willing? Or was there any part of your career where you felt like, oh my God, like, what am I doing? Or any doubt? Like, I know it's kind of reflecting, it kind of makes sense, but I wonder what was it like in that moment?
So, my second role as a CIO was working for a life insurance company. And it's a very strange set of circumstances how I got appointed. But the second day in the role, the CEO called me in and he said, Ken, your first job is to throw out the IBM mainframe and please go to the IBM AS400 machine. Now, that was taking a mainframe and moving to a mid-sized machine. My immediate words to him was, but that can't be done. And he said to me, I don't pay you to tell me why it can't be done. I pay you to tell me how it can be done. Go away and figure it out. And I walked away and I said, this guy's nuts. Okay. And I phoned a friend of mine at IBM. I said, listen, I'm going to put a paper together, just tell you why this isn't going to work. And we started drawing on a whiteboard. And a couple of hours later, we said, maybe he's not so stupid after all. So even when I've been given a challenge that I thought was impossible, I sat down, off saying I need to prove this person wrong, and proved him right. So have I ever said I can't do this? Sure, okay. You come across that every day, but then you've got to sit down and say, and using the words, how can it be done? Okay. And in my mentoring and coaching, I've used those words so many times. Don't tell me what can't be done. Tell me what can be done. And challenge me more. I heard the most magnificent quote 2 weeks ago. I was at a talk. The guy's name is Richard Tabakawala. And he just turned around and said, ask the wrong questions. And he was giving the example of he was working with car manufacturing companies, and they were talking about competitors, etc. He said, you're asking the wrong questions. He said, the questions you should be asking is, will people still be driving cars in 10 years? And you kind of go, yeah. And that's a few years back he was asking those questions. You kind of go, that's weird. But if you look at Uber and you look at, and you kind of go, I don't drive a car anymore when I go. I don't rent a car when I go somewhere else. I don't rent a car when I go to London to visit my youngest daughter. I don't rent a car when I go to San Francisco or, I Uber. So do I need a car? So just think of the questions that people aren't asking, and challenge people to come up with answers themselves. It's you'd be surprised how people rise to challenges.
I know that's so true. I think it's kind of similar to Stoic philosophy, if that makes sense. It's a bit like, asking, like continuously asked, otherwise you like idle. Like that's kind of the way to go. Yeah. Good point.
Is ITIL still relevant to my organization? If it's not, that's fine. If it is, good. Continue to invest in it. If you have an issue, what is the solution? Okay, is ITIL the solution? Don't think that ITIL's 30 years old. The framework still works today. So carry on working with it. We still use checks in the American banking system. Checks, most of the world, are now non-legal tendency. They don't use them anymore. Okay. But the check systems in the banks are 30 to 40 years old. It still works. Why must I rewrite the check system when it still works? Okay. Now they modified it with front end, take a picture of a check, deposit it into your account. But the back end of the checking systems are still ancient, still works.
No, that's so true. I guess it works to a point that I remember signing my husband's check once, where it has his name, and I was kind of in a rush, and I just gave it to someone, and it bounced. And I thought, who? Like we always like take a photo and deposit. Like who's checking? But like it goes back to your point. It's still working. It's like even though
Works.
not many people use it, it's still efficient. Yes, I think that kind of makes sense. That does make sense. And I think, one thing I do want to ask you on this topic, because you kind of mentioned this sooner than I expected, like is ITIL like still relevant, especially like AI? There's so much hype about AI right now. Where do you think it's gonna be for ITIL in the world of like when a lot of companies are just gonna be using, AI standardize their process and, things of that nature? How what role ITIL will play in that space?
The short answer is I don't know.
Don't know. Yeah.
In my
So
opinion, yeah, every
maybe let me reframe my question. Is the question is, do you think ITIL will still play a role? Like knowing what you know, it will play a role.
absolutely. Now, so how much of it will be managed by AI? So let's take a very easy example. Okay, incident management is incident management. Okay. There's still going to be incidents in an organization that need to be reported. Now, can AI automatically detect an incident and log it on behalf of the user? Maybe. Okay. Can AI also detect it and fix it? Yes. But I still need to know about that incident. So I still need it logged and reported on. Because if I don't know about the incidents, I can't fix the core problem. So the concept of incident management will still be there. How much of that can be automated with AI, I don't know yet. And I don't think anybody can really tell us. Every now and then, some excitement gets generated in the IT industry with something new. Internet, iPhone, mobile phone. AI is the next wave. But we don't know enough about it yet.
Yeah, no, I think it's very much infancy, right? It's like, I think because,
One of the companies I'm involved in, we are starting to code with two people what 10 people were coding because of AI. Okay, that's an 80% reduction in development staff. And you kind of go, is that a trend? Is it a unique? Is it sustainable? Does it mean I keep my 10 and have five times the output, or do I save on costs and have the same output? But where's AI going? And there's not enough use cases, business cases, success stories, trends to be able to measure what this is going to do for us. I use AI. I'm on ChatGPT. I use Copilot. I'm starting to play with Copilot and asking it to help me do things. But I'm scratching the surface, of what to do.
What's your favorite so far? If you use ChatGPT and well, Copilot background is ChatGPT,
Definitely.
but it's different version.
I think they
So
do. Copilot's
it's
helping me with my micros. ChatGPT I use for questions. Okay. What's
okay.
this? Help me with this. Help me frame this. Throw a letter at it and say rewrite it. So I'm using ChatGPT. Copilot I'm using to help me, forward notes and put it into presentations and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm using them for very different purposes. Once again, will they merge? Will they become separate? Will I can only have one tool? If you listen to some of going to be one AI tool that you'll use. I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I think we may use multiple AI tools. And I don't know where it's going. So AI is exciting, but it's still a little bit of what is it? And what's it going to help me with? How's it going to help me in my home? What's it going to do for personal life? I don't know. But it's exciting to be involved in it.
Yeah, maybe one of your grandchild can be looked after by AI babysitter. Who knows? I just read today, like Optimus robot from Tesla is going to like.
Bring AI and robotics together. What does that mean? Okay, exactly. How far can we take that? Can it change nappies? I think everybody in the world would be happy if somebody if you didn't have to change a nappy.
I know, right? Well, yeah, no, that's true. That is true. I mean, yeah, I imagine if there is like a machine just take the
Exactly.
I know. I mean, how much would it cost is the question, right? It's like what okay, cost a lot, a fortune.
Imagine the trust element, Rena. So, if I was on the board of an airline, okay, of an airline in South Africa, I was a member of the board. And do you know that a lot of the airplanes today don't need pilots? Okay, they can fly themselves and they can be
I
flown.
know.
People
I read
sitting
about it.
in one of the manufacturing plants or in a control center to fly the plane. Would you board a plane without a pilot?
No.
The human psyche doesn't allow you're bored a train without a train driver. Okay.
Okay. It's
Okay.
okay. It happens in London. You know that, those DLR.
Oh, I know.
They don't have any driver in it.
You're bored a train without a driver, but you're on board of an airplane without a pilot. The concept's the same.
No,
Okay.
but we're so high up in the sky. There's no way to
Well,
escape.
but the element of trust in the human psyche are linked to it. So coming back to the nappy thing. Would a family ever allow a robot to change a nappy? I'm not sure that's going to happen.
No, I
one
don't think
false
so.
move and you could have a major problem on your hands.
I know. I know. Imagine that. Yeah, no, I know. I mean, yeah, that's kind of a joking aside, but yeah, it's a very personal kind of task. You wouldn't really want to outsource for your kid. No. My next question is, anyone who is thinking to join service management world right now, what advice would you give them?
It's going to sound a little repetitive, but let me put it into context. Get those qualifications and certifications. So if you want to go into service management, okay, and you wish to choose ITIL, I'm putting on my sales hat and telling you ITIL is the best framework. Okay, I'm sure
It is.
others will tell you not,
No,
but I'm telling you ITIL is the best framework. Okay,
it is. It
I'm
is.
telling you from a practical point of view, having used it as a CIO, and yes, of course, I work for PeopleCert at the moment, but it is so. But get the qualifications. And I'm not saying that because you're a training organization, Rena. I'm saying that because that technical career background is going to hold you in good stead. So if I go and do the foundation course and I build on that, and I build all the way up till ITIL master, do you know how marketable I am in the marketplace? Because I've got that qualification. I would always suggest people get a college degree. I didn't get one, but don't follow me, okay? You need a
Right.
college degree, okay? Especially in today's world. You're not even going to get an interview unless you have a college degree. So get the college
Very
degree.
true.
But then
Very
after
true.
that, if you've got ITIL Masters, by the way, you're going to get an interview anywhere in the country with an IT service management vacancy, because they know you are the best at what you do. So get those qualifications, okay? Work in the company that you can excel in, that gives you the opportunities, but get the qualifications. It's always something I can't fall back on my technical career path anymore, because the technology I worked on doesn't exist. Okay. But the people that got ITIL Masters 5 years ago and they went and started running their own coffee shop and it didn't work can come back and be an ITIL Master today. Okay. It never goes away.
You know what? I completely agree. And I think once you get yourself to that level, it's like the world opens up. Like you're not just up to your day job, but you can do teaching, you can do consulting, you can write papers. I mean, you kind of establish yourself as kind of like an industry expert. You know, that's, and you work towards it. It's not something which happened overnight. So it kind of like you're committed. Yeah.
And in the PeopleCert world, you can now become an ITIL ambassador, which says you get involved in the product development. So, you're then working for the supplier of the tool that you are a master in and influencing the strategic direction of that tool. So, it just opens up a whole world of opportunities, and the more qualifications you've got behind your name, the more sought after you will be.
Yeah, no, absolutely, absolutely. Hey, I am going to stop recording for a minute. There we go. Okay, so this is what we do with all of our guests, Ken. So answer the question we ask you. Okay. If you don't know, you can say I don't know and then move on. So first question is, are you a tea person or a coffee person?
Coffee.
Coffee, good. Are you Coca-Cola or Pepsi?
Pepsi.
Okay, what's your favorite book?
Dr. Seuss, Oh, the Places You Will Go.
Oh, wow. Anything particular about that book which makes it your favorite?
It is the story of your life. Go and read
Story.
it.
Okay,
Oh,
I'm
the
going
Places
to.
You Will Go, Dr. Seuss. This is not a kid's book. This is an adult book.
Oh, really? I never took you for an adult.
I got given that book when I was interviewed by a multi-billionaire for a role
Okay.
in a new startup company. I got the role. I walked into his office and he had a pile of these Dr. Seuss books and he said, "Here, read this. This is my philosophy on life." I read
Incredible.
that. I immediately went and bought two and gave one to each of my kids. Each of my
Wow.
grandkids has the same book. It's in their side table. Go and buy Oh, the Places You Will Go by Dr. Seuss.
Going to, because I never thought he actually wrote any adult books.
Go
Because
and
I
read
read
it.
my
Go and
kids.
read it and
Get
come back to
to.
me and tell me it wasn't an adult book.
Yeah, no. Okay. Now I'm thinking, is it? But I'm going to check it out. Okay. What's your favorite movie?
Top Gun.
Tom Gunn. Tom Cruise fan or action movie fan?
Action movie fan.
Actually, fair.
Also,
Okay.
air fighters, fighter pilots, it's just a mass excitement for me.
Yeah, it stayed with you, right? Wanting to become a pilot. Yeah, it stayed with you. Makes sense. Makes sense. Okay. What annoys you?
What annoys me? Negativity.
Negativity, complaints.
Just people
Yeah.
that just continually complain. Not everything can be perfect in your life. Get over it. Just look at the good
Yeah,
things.
I think partly because you live in Florida and you have a lot of sun. Trust me, you need to come to New York. You need to New York in winter. I'm gonna have to ask you this question. Okay, all right. And one last question: what is one word advice you would give to people wanting to join service management? One word advice.
Enjoy the ride. Oh, one word. One word.
I mean,
Can
you can extend.
I give you two words?
You can get two words.
Do it.
Do it. Okay, good. And if you have to say one thing about ITIL, one word, again, one word, you have to say what ITIL is in one word, what would you say?
Gonna say three. Best of class.
Best of class. Awesome. I love it. Thank you so much for sharing your time, making time for us in your busy schedule. And, we look forward to chatting with you more.
Thank you,
Thank
Rina.
you.
Really.
Thank you again for listening, and I hope you have enjoyed the podcast episodes of me interviewing Ken Jarvis and learned about, his journey, how you can get started in IT service management space, and the importance of ITIL. Next week, I will be talking to David Cannon. So don't forget to join in. Till then, take care. This episode of Service Notes is sponsored by 24 Trainings. Check out their service management training classes at www.24trainings.com.